The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 9 minutes after 7. Appreciate you waking up with me this morning. I also appreciate Kristen Roberts waking up here and agreeing to come on. I find her field of law fascinating. She's an intellectual property attorney and deals all the time in trademark and copyright registration, licensing, enforcement, and litigation. She has a firm. She founded it, Trestle Law Firm, T-R-E-S-T-L-E. And, of course, I'll put her information up on my site, too, if you ever have needs for this. Kristen, welcome back to the show. Always good having you on.
So good to be here, Bill. Thank you so much for having me.
And now, the last few times I've had you on, we were conversing a lot about artificial intelligence and copyright and, you know, what was happening as, you know, actors ended up having their images being used and manipulated by artificial intelligence. But now we're going into something different. It's, the right to repair. There's been a big movement for right to repair. I've been a fan of this for a long, long time. And we're looking for the right to repair stuff that you buy. And we're looking at the Lowly McFlurry machine as an example. There was a big win here recently for people trying to fix their own things. Could you tell us how this deals with your field, you know, intellectual property and more?
Yeah, of course. So interestingly, most software is covered by copyright law. It's, you know, protected by copyright. And right. Generally speaking, you should be able to repair a machine or the software when it breaks, like, for example, a McFlurry machine, which if anybody has gone into a McDonald's and has wanted a soft serve or a milkshake, more often than not, in about 30% of the restaurant franchises across the country, they're broken 100% of the time.
And I was wondering about this because it's something that people have like joked about. I know there was a similar machine over in Sonic. The Sonic would be Sonic machine would be broken forever, off and on, for the soft serve. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, soft serve is kind of a big part of your business. What do you mean the ice cream machine's broken and hasn't been fixed
right.
yet? Right,
that's right. And they're actually, you know, the franchise owners are saying that they're losing hundreds of dollars a day, some of them up to $650 a day, and they're waiting over 90 days to have these machines repaired because right now, there's something called a trusted platform module in these machines, a TPM, and that is essentially a digital lock that prevents you from getting into the machine to repair the software that has gone down, because when they go in, they update the firmware constantly. I mean, if you have an iPhone, right, and you're plugging it in, or any kind of phone, and it says, hey, we need to update your software, the same thing can be said about these machines. And right now, there's a section of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, it's called Section 1201, that prevents people from bypassing digital locks in order to repair the broken software, the busted software, even though it is not a violation of copyright law to do so.
Huh.
So it's creating effectively a monopoly for these manufacturers because it's requiring you to only go to the manufacturer to repair it, because the only people who can bypass that lock are, guess who? The manufacturer.
The manufacturer or their agents. And I would imagine the manufacturer's agents are probably quite expensive. There aren't enough of them, and they're very busy. Would that be fair?
That's exactly right. I mean, in the case of the McFlurry machines, they're talking about it being, you know, a very simple key code to repair it. And this is what the manufacturers are claiming. Well, you can repair it yourself. You have two ways of doing it. You enter this 16-digit code, which always makes me think of, you know, when you play video games and you're like, and you're doing your secret cheat codes in the video game, up, down, up, down, up, down, left, right, left, right. It's kind of like that, where they say, well, you can put in your 16-digit code. But the problem with that is they're constantly updating the firmware for these things. So you never know if that code is accurate. And same goes for the second way, which is, well, you have the manual to repair it. But again, that manual is likely out of date when they're constantly updating the firmware on these things.
But then, this may be a stupid question. This is not a real complex operation. Why do you need to keep updating the firmware on something that is, what, are we worried? Why should you even have to have a blue screen of death on an ice cream machine, for crying out loud? Has anyone ever asked that question?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, partially making sure that, according to the manufacturers, if you ask them, they're probably going to say, well, we want to make sure it all works correctly. And, you know, we're constantly trying to make these things better. But, you know, if you ask somebody a little bit more cynical like me, it's probably because they want to be able to have, you know, these things repaired and have somebody go out and get paid and it's hundreds of dollars each time they go out to do something for about 15 minutes.
Well, it sounds to me that there's a nice little income stream in repairing stuff there, possibly.
Exactly, right. And you know what's funny? There was a company that's currently in litigation right now. I think they're called Kitch. They invented something that attaches to the machine to make it easier for people to fix them themselves in the store. And they got sued because they basically said, well, no, we can't let you do that. It makes them more dangerous. And then what did the manufacturers do? Taylor is the name of the ice cream, the machine company, the main machine company that is making all of these McFlurry machines. Taylor ended up reverse engineering that Kitch product. And that's how they ended up in litigation over this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it keeps you in business, I would imagine, then. But apparently there was a lawsuit about this fixing the McFlurry machine. And what happened? It was actually a win for McDonald's, I guess, or the franchisees. What happened?
Well, currently, they're over the Kitch product, they're still in litigation over that. So we don't know what's going to happen.
Oh,
but currently, with Section 1201 of the Copyright Act, every 3 years, they revisit this Section 1201 to see if there are any exemptions that can be put in place. Because like I said before, it's technically a violation of the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, to go in and bypass this digital lock on the software, even though fixing the software or bypassing the lock wouldn't actually be infringing on the copyright itself. So they revisited this 1201. They revisit it every 3 years, and they just revisited it. And a couple of NGOs and public interest groups all put out there, hey, we need this fixed. We need these exemptions to be made so that we can fix things like McFlurry machines. And they tried to make it pretty broad and include things not just in retail food industries.
Yeah, what are some of the other items that would be affected by this now, this rule of relaxing?
Right. One of the big ones was heavy equipment, so heavy manufacturing equipment, like from Caterpillar, et cetera.
Oh.
And the Copyright Office actually said no. They kept it really limited to just food retail machines.
So this means that the construction people are still screwed. They have to call the factory authorized person.
Exactly.
And this would include, I would imagine, the John Deere tractors, famously known for blowing up at harvest time, and then you can't fix it in time to get things in.
Yeah, and you know, I think that this poses a bigger issue because Section 1201 is really something that is creating the ability for these manufacturers to have this monopoly. And there are ways around Section 1201, or at least ways that they could make Section 1201 and the process of revisiting it more friendly to people who are not trying to infringe. But because of a lot of pressure from people in industries like film and manufacturing, et cetera, it makes it really challenging for us to see any real change to this Section 1201.
Well, I'm hoping you're wrong about that in the respect that over time, I hope this gets chipped away, because this monopolized culture that we find ourselves in right now, you know, in which Apple says, nope, you can't get inside this. You have bought this this iPhone for $1,300, whatever the case might be. But yeah, you can just use it. That's all. You try to do anything to it, you're in big trouble, et cetera, et cetera. I think that has to go away. It just has to go away, because we're spending thousands of dollars for devices that were not supposedly allowed or permitted, or if we do, we could brick it type of stuff. And I think it's wrong.
I completely agree with you. And I think even further than that, we've already established a right to repair. So why are we throwing up roadblocks for people who are just trying to get something fixed?
Are these companies that are working this, are they well politically connected? Is the Taylor Milkshake Company politically not so connected, and so it got taken down this time? And Caterpillar is?
You know what's so interesting about this whole thing is that oftentimes it's not the exact manufacturers. So in this case, Taylor, when this NGO put out the request for modification to Section 1201, it's not often the companies themselves that are responding and saying, no, we don't want this to happen. It's unrelated third parties. And that's really the issue with this whole process in revisiting Section 1201 every 3 years, is that they open up the opposition, the ability to oppose these proposed changes to anybody who may be affected. So we're getting people like in the film industry, in books, because all of these proposed changes are sort of lumped together and reviewed at the same time. So you may not even see Taylor opposing this at all, but because somebody else does, they can come through and, you know, just sweep out all of these changes that they're trying to make.
Okay.
And it just really doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of how they run this, you know, this review.
Kristen Roberts is on the program here. She's an intellectual property attorney. Her firm is Tressel Law Firm, TresselLawFirm.com. And I will get all that. I think it's Tressel Law, TresselLaw.com.
Tressel Law.
Yeah, TresselLaw.com. We'll get that information up there. Like I said, I'm fascinated by this. What about the right to repair vehicles? Is there any push to get it to the point where we can break into our own vehicles as time goes on? Because you'll get to the point where vehicles stop being supported and the touchscreen goes bad at some point in the future, and the manufacturer's not really going to help you much. And if we're not allowed to really find a way to dig into this stuff and fix stuff ourselves, we're just going to be throwing stuff into the landfill, and that's not good. Any thoughts?
And, you know, we already actually see that. That was one of the arguments in this iteration of request for review of 1201. There were some, you know, the medical device industry was like, in some cases, the only option when the digital lock can't be circumvented or you lose the passcode, for example. Some of them are locked out with passcodes. And if that passcode gets lost, your only recourse is to throw the whole thing away and get a new one.
Wow.
So it doesn't make sense, in my opinion, to, you know, we definitely want to balance protection of intellectual property, because as an IP attorney myself, you know, that's what I'm in the business of doing, is making sure that valuable intellectual property is properly protected. But we don't want to go so far that we're giving monopolies to companies for things like repairing stuff like your vehicle, for example. I think it doesn't make sense to have something spend thousands of dollars, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars for these cars.
Well, think about that. Well, but have you ever looked at what you have to give up to Elon Musk to buy a Tesla? And essentially, you know, you buy the car, but you know, they own the software. So essentially, they have you buy the unmentionables.
Yeah, I mean, so I own one. I got a Model X.
You do.
So I understand, and then they update. Everything is also subject to terms of service, terms and conditions, and we don't really have an option, right? The option is don't use it. Well, I need to use it. I'm going to watch my Netflix. I'm going to watch my TV. You know what I mean? Like, there's the option is, either agree to everything we're making you agree to or don't use it. That's the only, those are the only, those are not good options.
You know?
So I do think that at some point, things are going to get to a point where we need to revisit, where there's going to be no option but to revisit how we implement this. And if we also look at the Digital Millennium Copyright Act as a whole, I mean, we're talking about something that was enacted in the 90s. It is 2024. We really need to get Congress on board with getting really up to date with technology. But that in and of itself, I mean, as you probably know, is difficult when most people don't even know what an algorithm is.
Kristen, what could be done to improve the proliferation of 55-page terms of services on every stupid app and every service that that you go to and every company's website that you look at? Because the whole idea of the law is that the law should be easy to understand by regular people, for the most part. Not every word necessarily in the law, but you see where I'm getting at, that we're now at this point where it's next to impossible to understand what's going on when someone throws a 55-page terms of service at you, and you don't have time to deal with this. What could be done to lean that out? Is there any way to fight back legally, in your view?
You know, fighting back legally, I think this is the number one challenge, I think, in my industry, is that we have an industry like the law. The legal industry is very slow moving by design, because we don't want things to change, especially, you know, laws. We don't want laws to change on a whim. We want them to change with how society evolves, which oftentimes takes time. But when we pair that with technology that moves so fast, where we're talking, you know, in 2 years, AI is going to pass us, right, as people, you know, they sort of naturally butt heads against one another, and it makes it very difficult for us to see change in the industry. So I think until the legal industry becomes more willing to accept new technology and start playing with it and start figuring out how it applies quickly, we're not really going to see a lot of change. And on top of that, we're going to need to see people who are willing to fight back, which unfortunately costs money, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't do my work for free. I mean, this is still, we're still part of a capitalist society. I still want to make money, and I'm not necessarily going to take cases like this, which are going to change things for free. So we're relying on things like NGOs and nonprofits to do that important work. But if we don't fund them, you know, we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Mm. I could see a day coming in which, you know, what's going to happen is some sort of legal move to stop the selling of you. In other words, stop selling, because every time a service is free, you're always the product. You understand that part. You get it, right?
Yeah.
And maybe people are actually going to, in order to protect themselves, have to actually start paying for stuff that they tend to enjoy for free. Because free has a really high cost out there as far as privacy and marketing issues go.
It really does. And you have to evaluate your desire to use the free thing over your giving away of your data and your information, because I think a lot of people give it up very freely without necessarily thinking about the consequences of what that looks like.
Maybe the next revolution that we're going to see is going to be the hackers' revolution. And I'm talking like a white hacker, a white hat hacker of sorts, in which, all right, John Deere will not repair your tractor affordably. I'm going to build an alternative operating system and install it in your tractor. I mean, can you do that and not get in trouble? I'm kind of curious how that works. If you could actually just completely strip that strip their software out and put your stuff in and control it yourself.
Well, that's kind of what Kitsch was doing with the soft serve machines. They created a piece of equipment that would attach to the machine to help bypass and sort of allow the people inside the restaurant chains or in the franchises to make their own repairs. And basically McDonald's corporate said, no, we can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. You're creating a risk that it's going to blow up, you know.
Okay, it's going to blow up. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I think a lot of it is tied to financial gain too. So we have to, you know, we want people to be able to, I want companies to be able to make money, but I also don't want to do it at the expense of, you know, people's ability to compete.
Mm, good point. Now, I seem to recall the days when the Taylor Milkshake Company put out pretty simple milkshake machines that had, they're kind of like Chrome, and they had a switch. And there's the switch. You just flip the switch, you know, no software, just a switch. And then the milkshake machine worked, and then you made the milkshake. But silly me.
Especially now when you're serving, I think we also have to look at population too, right? We have so many more people in this country than we did in 1970, even, you know what I mean? So, so you're getting hundreds of people per day, as opposed to maybe 50 or 60 people per day, or, you know, thousands of people per day visiting. So they're trying to always innovate in order to make things more efficient. And McDonald's is one of the best at efficiency.
Oh, figuring absolutely. Out- Absolutely.
You know, make things faster and go. And so that's really why I think we're seeing a lot of this equipment and technology change, because they're trying to not just push a button and make a milkshake. They're trying to code something in so it can make 16 milkshakes at once.
So we can't necessarily solve every problem in America, but maybe the ice cream machine will be fixed in most of the restaurants pretty soon. That's good.
Yeah, we've got a vanilla solution to this, right?
All right. Kristen Roberts, a pleasure talking with you. I'm glad we're concentrating on the important stuff with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. All right. Tressel Law Firm, TresselLaw.com. I'll get all the information up. A delight talking to you as always, and we'll have you back as always. Take care.
You as well. Thanks, Phil.
727. KMED.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall
protect what matters most without compromise.
It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
I have a talk with State Senator Dennis Linthicum, running for Secretary of State for a couple of weeks. We'll touch in with him. Final time before Election Day Tuesday. Today we'll be talking about what ended up happening with that race. Okay. Let me do a couple of emails of the day before news here. Emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com is the website there. You can go get your appointment there. And they have a pretty cool situation going on in which if you get a crown there, a lot of times you can get while you wait. It's not one of these things where they take care of your tooth and then send you away for a few weeks while an out-of-state lab ends up making the crown. Now, they've got the lab right in the building, and a lot of times they can make that while you wait. If you got got the time, just hang out and, you know, read a magazine for a half an hour. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. Kevin Watson writes me this morning about Measure 114. Kevin Starrett was talking about how, you know, the courts are, I should say the state, though, is trying to say there are all sorts of things that could be used in crimes, and so, you know, we can ban them, right? And Kevin brought up an interesting point. He says, Bill, masks are used in crimes, too. Can we ban those? Interesting. Patrick writes me about a conspiracy airport thing, Dallas to Medford direct. Hey, Bill, why does Medford International, Rogue Valley, Valley International Airport, a rather small airport by international standards, need a direct flight connection to Dallas-Fort Worth? Gee, I didn't know that they were looking for that here, Patrick. But anyway, he's continuing. The single runway, 1432, is too short, 8,800 feet. It's too weak to support many wide-bodied aircraft. Adding a direct route from MFR to more major cities just doesn't make sense. We already have these following direct flights out of MFR to Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Salt Lake City, Denver, and Phoenix. MFR is not big enough to be a hub. The persistent fog we get most years shuts it down, sometimes for days, and the airport only has a single runway. The old cross runway 927 for crop dusters was decommissioned many years ago. Now, adding more direct flights will just cause too much congestion unless the current runway is renamed 14R32L and a parallel runway is built to handle additional flights. Now, in my opinion, the only reason, this is the part that really got me about Patrick's email here. The only reason for having a direct flight to Dallas-Fort Worth is to fly in illegal aliens for resettlement in our area. Oh, I'm sorry, we're not supposed to call them that. We're supposed to call them undocumented migrants or pre-citizens. No. Criminal invaders. You know, that's an interesting deal. Of course, I don't know. When they've been, when taking the illegal aliens and just redistributing them, you know, around the country, did they do it with direct flights or did they have change planes? It's a lot easier to fly as an illegal alien. You know, Gus, the feds just bring you on and give you a little sheet of paper. Everything's all fine. Everything's all forgiven. Of course, you try to do that and you're thrown off of the plane. You know, that could be. Could it be? Today we have the illegal alien flight coming in from Dallas, Fort Worth. There we go. Gate 5. It's an interesting theory. We'll have to maybe think about that for conspiracy theory again, Patrick. Appreciate the email, Bill at BillMyersShow.com. Do you owe the IRS back taxes you can't afford?
Are your B number 32787.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
State Senator and current GOP Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum rejoins the program. Dennis, how you doing this morning? Welcome back.
Very good, Bill. It's good to be back with you. Last week, I was out of office, and I've been meeting a lot of people, shaking a lot of hands, and I caught a cold of some variety. But I'm back on my feet and ready to go.
Yeah, glad to hear that. Glad to hear this. And here it is. We're down to the wire here, and you have a piece out here, a newsletter, which of course I'll link to naturally. And seems that it really is a plea on voter turnout at this point. I was wondering if you could break down a bit of what you're thinking there.
Well, yeah, my opponent keeps telling us that this is, you know, a safe and effective election system, right? You know, kind of like the safe and effective vaccine or whatever. You know, they can use propaganda type words to label anything safe and secure. Our public schools are safe and secure, or I will fight for safety in our public schools. And this is really meaningless if there's no details behind what you mean by those words that you're, you know, throwing around the internet.
Yeah, that's why you call it fluff, stuff, and fraud, you know, essentially, the system, right?
Yeah, and I think this is the point that I'm trying to make is you have an individual like myself who's willing to describe in accurate details with not only common sense, logic, and historical wisdom, but you know, the language of the bills themselves that have been passed by Democrats, which actually undermine our democracy. So for the party to be, quote, trying to save democracy, it's real obvious at the presidential candidate level, Kamala Harris didn't go through a single primary. She didn't win a single vote from anybody in any primary in any state. Not one vote has been cast for her to be the Democrat Party candidate. And yet
here she is, right?
She is. She's got a lockstep hold on everybody paying attention to what's going on and how she'll save the world, et cetera. And it's like, well, this ought to be an affront to our common sense. This ought to be an affront to our logic, an affront to what we really, if we truly hold this idea of majority rule as being the top-notch, go-get-em type of concept, and it is morally superior than any other concept, then they ought to be playing by that same rule book. But the Democrat Party doesn't seem to be playing by that rule book.
No. And we have a single party rule here in the state of Oregon at this point. What has been concerning to me here is, you know what happened last week, that State Representative Kim Wallen endorsed your opponent. And my jaw kind of drops on situations like this. And What is your reaction to this? Because I don't see your opponent as someone that is really talking about really getting into the nuts and bolts of the Oregon election system and getting rid of all of this loosey-goosiness, do you? I mean, you know, so why would anybody step out from the Republican Party and give a sheen of respectability to that position right now? I don't get it.
Well, there's always, you know, some calculation. There's some return on the investment. Somebody, you know, said, I should do this because it will turn out to, benefit me in some way. You can't get away from that. You think that only happens in the corporate world, but that happens, you know, this is what politics is. If you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And I have no idea what shenanigans have gone on or what Kim Wallen hopes to gain from this. But it's really unfortunate because if you have a bunch of Republicans who support your stance, your position, and then you tell them, but there's this other position over there that's a statewide candidate, and we should not vote for him. At least you ought to say why. Why is my opponent a better candidate than I am? Does he have better math skills? Does he have a view of government that supports your right to free speech?
Well, the way I look at it, Tobias Reid he's just a compliance with the status quo guy. That's what he is.
That's what I think that too. I think, you know, he's not for dismantling the disinformation, misinformation.
Yeah, the machine. He's not for dismantling that disinformation program that the current Secretary of State has in there. Really?
No, he's keen on it. He thinks it's a good idea. He thinks that is how we protect our democracy. And in my debate with him at the in Salem at the convention center, I said, this is a complete misunderstanding of power, authority, and faith. You don't have faith in government because they're powerful. That's what, you know, is a mistaken notion coming from the Democrat left. You have faith in government because by example and by history, they are doing things that are, quote, good for you versus things that are harmful to you. So if government is going to strip your free speech rights, that is not going to be good. And how can you trust a government that's planning on doing that? And so we have.
And why would you vote for candidates that are in favor of that is what I don't get. It's hard for me to be shocked about much of anything. But what happened last week did shock me. It really did. But it kind of goes down to, I think in the same newsletter, you were talking about how many Republicans will not turn out to vote. Isn't that something that you put in this latest newsletter, if I recall?
Yeah, well, my comment, has been, I've been hammering on, the fraud and fake stances that the Democrat Party has been taking about increasing voter access, increasing right. your time to vote.
Everything's about making it loosier and goosier and easier to pull fast ones. Okay, that's what it's all about.
That's right. And it's all about looks. None of it, all the words, all the pitches, all the catchphrases, all the slogans are completely false. None of those things happen from the legislation, from the words on the written page that become law.
Okay.
None of the things.
Okay, I get that, Dennis. Do you know how many Republicans didn't vote last time around? Just curious, in Oregon.
For Republicans in the primary, 468,000 Republicans are registered to vote as Republicans, and 460, that's a half a million round numbers, 468,000 Republicans did not vote. They did not even bother to vote. And those 468,000 would make one gigantic difference when it comes to this election. We also know that there's another 1.3 million liberty-leaning, conservative-leaning, I'm done with government interfering in my life kinds of non-affiliated constitutional party Republicans who have sworn off the Republican Party because they never follow through.
But you see, that's kind of my point. That's where I wanted to take this. Could it be, and this is something that Republican candidates of all various stripes need to consider, including Representative Kim Wallman, could there be a reason that these half million Republicans will not participate or haven't been participating in the elections because they know that most of these standard Republicans aren't fighting for Republican principles anymore? And could it be something that simple? And if you would run as a Republican that actually wants to fight for the Republican principles and the party platform and all the rest of it, instead of endorsing Democrats or going in there to help pass Democrat legislation, maybe they'd have a better voter turnout. I know it's a crazy theory of mine. All right. But I'm going to throw it at you. Okay?
Yeah, it's
hit it.
It's just crazy. Look, if you're going to join the Green Party, you ought to be green all the way through.
Okay, all right. I'll cut you off there. This is what I really wanted to say here. The Democrats have great turnout because the Democrats know that when you vote for the Democrat, you're going to get the Democrat hard left / communist worldview put into place. And they're going to write legislation based on that sort of thing. With half the Republicans, you don't know what they're really trying to do.
Right. And it's this loose language that is really you can actually see it in Kamala Harris. She had this big push as she got into the candidacy. And everybody's praising her because she's black and she's female and on and on. And then all of a sudden she gets in front of a microphone and she cannot tell us what solutions she has, what policies she has. She's got a catchphrase, the opportunity economy. The Californians and the Oregonians in the legislature in both states and Washington state too here on the left coast killed the gig economy with their labor laws. And so if you want an opportunity economy, the Uber and Lyft drivers were the easiest, the McDonald's.
Dennis, I get it. Focus on the Oregon race right now, though. Okay. Because battle. This is the battle in front of you right now. Okay.
Well, the battle in front of us is one of sticking to your principles. If you're not going to stick to your principles, then what good are you to either the Republican Party or the Democrat Party? Kamala is failing now because she's not sticking to the principles that the left wants her to speak loudly and clearly to. They don't have them. When it comes to Republicans, Republicans have all of these baseline, traditional, foundational principles, and Republicans somehow seem to think those are somehow offensive, and yet those are how we win the nation back. Look at what Trump's doing. Look at his Madison Square Garden event. Everybody can mislabel it And yet it was a successful event, and it was fabulous.
Yeah, agreed. Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum with me this right now. Now, I have not been able to clear this call here, Dennis, so I'm live without a net. We'll just see how this rolls. You have a question for Dennis Linthicum. Good morning. Who's this?
Yeah. Hi, this is Alan, the Applegate.
Yeah, Al.
Hey, so if the kid in Pennsylvania had been successful and taken out Donald Trump, who would be the candidate in the Republican Party right now? It would be J.D.
Vance,
right?
I don't know that. You can't speak to a hypothetical, so there is no answer to that. What you're suggesting is we would have just put somebody in there, and I would suggest whenever there's something horrid like an assassination, and you're suggesting to think that everything becomes the same is rather ridiculous. And on top of that, we have 3.5 years where Biden's dementia was in full play. The 25th Amendment should have been utilized and was not utilized because everybody was trying to hide it from the American public. So to somehow now say, therefore, if we do the same thing and assassinate the primary candidate that's running on the Republican ballot, they'll have to break all the rules. It's a ridiculous argument, and you and I can't make any statement about a hypothetical.
All right. Dennis, at this point, it's really about turnout, and this is why I'm going to take it back to, you know, the 500,000 that didn't vote last time around. Maybe they will this time because it's a presidential election, but I have a feeling we're still going to see a significant undervote, and I would highly suggest that that part of this is Republican dissatisfaction with Republicans not actually doing or fighting for what they run on, or what they claim to run on, or even paying attention to the party situation. I'm speaking at the Oregon state level, especially Oregon state level and state legislators. Would that be a fair assessment? And that's what we got to fix. You got to fix it and have people with principle elected that are going to do what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, and the important thing here is this doesn't happen at the ballot box. This happens in the hearts and minds and souls of the individuals who are going to be candidates. Are you going to stick to your word in your business dealings? Are you going to stick to your word in your political policy making effort? Are you going to stick to your word when you say you're going to do something like cancel the misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation software contract?
That is your number one. That is your number one pledge. First off, right, first thing you would do as Secretary of State, you cancel that. What else would you do too? So you get rid of the spy, you know, the disinformation spy from the state of Oregon. You get rid of that. All right.
Yeah, and the other thing, you know, I highlighted an article just last week. You'll put it up on your website, mm-hmm, where the Secretary of State is writing the rules about how things happen and what images look like and how things are filled out and whatever. And they keep pushing towards, you can provide us with anything, a utility bill, an old crumpled receipt from Costco. We don't even know what people have been submitting.
Oh, and then you can sign up to vote then. So you would stop this baloney that here's a utility bill, hence, in other words, specific power created an account for me, hence I am a citizen ready to vote. That's essentially what the Secretary of State right now is doing, right?
That's correct. And,
okay,
and you know, and I know that Pacific Power did, Mid-State Electric, Pacific Power, none of these guys give a rip about whether you're a citizen or not. And for the most part, nobody else does either. But when it comes to voting at the federal, for any federal office, you have to be registered. You have to be a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, but they're trying to finagle that here at the state level. Now, Ben, what about the issue that you and State Senator Kim Fancher ended up fighting over, in which you could not look or audit the election after the fact, or you couldn't take a look at the ballots, not without spending close to $750,000 to $1 million in Jackson County. I'm just giving that example because we remember the story a number of months ago, because you had to go hand through it and make sure that nobody put anything identifiable on a ballot based on some outrageous version of privacy. You know, could
right.
that go away and, as part and, of a new Secretary of State with you? Because I'm pretty sure your opponent will not be going for this.
Oh, yeah. The quote is that he cares about individual privacy. And it's like, well, wait a minute. If you hire 25 people to scan these ballot images looking for personal information, AI can't do it. AI doesn't know what personal information looks like. So you need human minds, human eyes to review these, and all that time and energy to look at the front side of the ballot and the back side of the ballot costs enormous amounts of money. And the bill for us to get a review of that was $862,000-some-odd. It's just ridiculous. I could rewrite that rule in a half a second simply by lining it out and striking it from the rule book.
Very good. That's an example of what can be done with a vote for Dennis Linthicum. Okay? To me, it's such a simple decision. It surprises me how other Republicans are having great difficulty coming to that conclusion, but that'll be a conversation for another time. Good luck, Dennis. Get out there and vote, folks, and we will talk with you next week, okay? You be well. Hopefully it'll be good stuff, and if not...
Next week will be the big day. We'll try and get people out bright and early and get them to make sure to get their ballots in, even if they haven't done it yet. Hopefully they've already done their best effort.
All right. So thanks for the call, as always. Be well. State Senator and hopefully next Secretary of State Dennis Linthicum on Skype. It is 757 KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
Rev up your engines, folks. America.
Hi, I'm Michael with Gage of Construction, and I'm on KMED.
Jeff in Selma writes me this morning, Bill, back in the 1990s, GM brought out the EV1 electric car. I remember those. I do. I remember those. Weren't too many of them, I don't think, were there? Anyway, he says they were available only as a lease. General Motors required all EV1s to be returned to them. Once returned, they were all crushed, with only a handful being disabled and placed in museums. Yeah, I remember that. I think they did the same thing, something similar to, I don't know if anyone remembers, I think Jay Leno has one of those Chrysler turbine, jet turbine engines, engine cars, and... Actually, pretty amazing, right? You know, with a jet engine in there, and that's how they ran the car. It's a nice Chrysler, nice-looking car, really. Only problem is that they were a pig because, even at sitting at idle, it would just take loads and loads of fuel, so that didn't work too well. And I also imagine that if you stood behind it when they cranked it up, that, you know, the heat probably would just, you know, melt your boots. that sort of thing. But they crushed those, too. Most of those ended up getting returned and crushed, and a few were saved, but not many. But some great automotive history, that's for sure. Hey, it's 8 o'clock. We'll catch up with some of the news with Town Hall. Also have the Kim Komando digital update. State Representative Dwayne Junker. We haven't talked to him for a couple of weeks. And what I enjoy about talking with Dwayne is that he's kind of like Honey Badger. He's not too much caring about liberals' feelings and things like that. It's just like what makes sense. And we'll talk with the Southern Oregon's political honey badger, in just a moment. This is the Bill Myers Show.